Good morning.
Good morning.
Class, if you came to the Memphis School preaching, you'd see this scene every day, would there not?
Yes, sir.
I always sit because I can't stand very long. And people can't stand me very long, so I just sit. This has been fun this week. I've enjoyed this. We've had tremendous material given to us. As Mike was preaching, I thought about the second fiddle in an orchestra. The first fiddle does the melody, but it's the second fiddle that gives the harmony. And when I'm a second fiddle, Andrew to Peter maybe, I'm the one giving the harmony. I think I'd rather be that than the one just banging it everywhere. So if you're just a second fiddle, that's a wonderful thing. You fellows have to preach a sermon on all of the second fiddles in the scriptures. The guys who were there to help, those who encouraged, those who stood with others. I realize something else about this assignment. This is the only sermon or lesson I will ever deliver that nobody else can. You can't preach this because it's what I've learned in preaching, teaching preachers, right? So this is interesting. This is a unique lesson. You folks know how to catch a unique rabbit? Unique up on it. This is a unique lesson, folks. Don't beat that drum, we're not in class. And I appreciate the assignment, although when I first read it, I thought, I haven't learned anything. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized I have. And the first thing that came to my mind when I thought about this topic was, I have learned in 32 years of teaching preacher students that I don't know enough. It has been my blessing because the study I had to do helped me more than it ever helped the students. I hope I've helped the students, but what I learned really helped me. And when you have to give diligence to show yourself approved unto God, you become the beneficiary. One of the things that I tell the students all the time is, if you're just studying here, and that's a great thing all day long studying the Bible, but if you're just doing that in order to pass the school year, and if you aren't careful and don't do some personal devotion, you're going to hurt yourself spiritually. And that's a strange thing to say, I suppose, that I'm studying the Bible, but I actually could hurt myself if the wrong motive isn't there. I mean, if the wrong motive is there. Or that's my only motive for studying it. And so I love students who fall in love with study. Who realize that I have to keep studying because I don't know enough. Brother Horner's been talking to us about expository preaching. You fellows realize there's 1,043 verses in Matthew? Run out of something to preach, think about it. That means there must be 1,043 sermons there, I guess. But I've learned that I just don't know enough. I'll tell you something else I've learned in all these years. Look at 2 Timothy 2:2. It was strange to me that just a week ago I ran into a fellow who said, I don't believe the church should be training preachers. And he said in his letter that to send that kind of money to a school of preaching was a sin. Well, I read in a book that Timothy was told that the things he had learned from Paul were to be committed to faithful men who would be able to teach others also. Then a fellow told me the other day that the Great Commission has been abrogated. It's not in force anymore. Because he didn't like the idea that a woman was under the Great Commission and had as much obligation to teach the gospel as I do. And so it must be gone. Filed away, he said. I said, well, what verse do you use to go out and teach others? He said, 2 Timothy 2:2. I said, that won't work. He said, why not? I said, because there aren't any sinners in that verse. They're all faithful men. How are you going to go out and teach a sinner? Where's your authority? But it's my privilege. And that's another thing I've learned, is that it's a privilege to teach faithful men. When Wayne Jones came to school, he was 11 years old. How old were you really? 17, weren't you? Weren't you our youngest ever?
Until the next year.
When Barry Odell came, that's right. Then I thought, I don't know about a 17-year-old, but David, it was a privilege to teach him. He was smart as you.
Smarter.
Smarter, maybe. Now, David, on the other hand, was a member at South Irving when I was preaching, and he said, I want to go to school. I said, let's take a pickup truck ride, or we took one or something. And all through that ride, I tried to talk him out of it. I did my best. Now you know what kind of a judge of character I am. It's a privilege to teach these folks, because they're faithful men. Can you imagine? I teach in a school where the people, for the most part, want to learn. I feel sorry for public school teachers when those children come in and they don't want to hear anything. It makes me sad for them. But these guys want to learn. What a privilege that is. If you ever got a chance to teach in a preacher training school, go ahead and do it. But isn't there authority here for the church to train her preachers? Who better to do that? I can tell you some universities that if you go there, they will destroy your faith. They won't build it. And they certainly won't train you to preach. And so I've learned. What a great privilege it has been for me. I've taught men who are now running GBN, OABS, Mission Works, all kinds of good things are happening. We have over 1,200 graduates now out in the field somewhere. We have a few nuts. I got that line from Brother Cates. We're not proud of them, but every school has some graduates like that. And I never measure a school by the graduate I meet. That's his business. That's the way he is. We didn't teach him that. In fact, Brother Chris, what's my favorite line about notes? What's my favorite line about notes? What is it? Don't quote me from your notes. That's right. Why? Because you can get it mixed up. A third thing I've learned, Genesis 2:18. What in the world has that got to do with anything? For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, cleave unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Coming to a preacher school is hard on marriages. The pressure is so great to study, spend an inordinate amount of time to study. But one time as I was going through the middle school preaching as a student, I came home on a Friday evening and my wife had our three children lined up. She said, Keith, I'd like to introduce you to these people. Until I became the one who set the curriculum at school, there was no mandatory wise class, but I know something about that. And that is that if you train him but you don't train her, you're going to hurt that marriage. You're going to cause a division in the two, at least spiritually, if not in knowledge and so on. And so we have mandatory classes for the wives. But I learned something else about wives. I learned that the number one reason that some men who want to preach can't come to school is she won't leave mommy and daddy. Sisters, listen to that again and pass it on to all your sisters. Leave father and mother. If I'm not ready to do that, I'm just not ready to get married. And that would go for the husband too. But when that woman can encourage him, my wife prayed for me to be a preacher before I became a Christian. If she can be like that, then we have a couple that's going to set the world on fire. But I do know that there is pressure on the marriage. And we try to account for that at Memphis. And we try to counsel and talk about it. And my wife is teaching a class right this quarter called Love Life and Christian Marriage. I don't know that she did while you were there, Shana, in case she might have been sick at that time. Or, yeah. But anyways, we recognize the problem. I'll tell you another thing I've learned from training preachers. That preachers are the hardest people in the world to teach personal work and to get them to do it. What did you say? I said preachers are the hardest people in the world to teach personal work and to get them to do it. Because when they're studying with someone, what they want to do is preach to him. And that isn't personal work. You have to study with the person. You have to let him find out what the verse says and so on. They're hard to train. I am a teacher at the Mount School of Preaching by accident. I was standing in the hallway at the Mount Arnold building years ago. This would be 1976 or 7. Brother Hearn walked out of his office and he said, if you knew Brother Hearn, that's how he started every conversation. Because Brother Hardiman did it, and Brother Hardiman was Brother Hearn's hero. So he cleared his throat and he said, you ever taught personal work? Yes, sir. Well, go upstairs and fill in for Brother Whitaker. He's sick today. I said, Brother Hearn, I don't work here. Go upstairs. That's how it started. But the first class was personal work. And guess what I was hearing from those guys? That's not our job. We're the preacher. Now I'm concerned because at Memphis they're allowed to use their computers in classes. I told all of them, when you get out of school, baptize that computer. I caught a student the other day playing freestyle while he was supposed to be in class taking notes. And I'm wondering how many hours are being wasted on that computer now. Elders, you might take a hint here. Look at this look. I'm getting a sheepy zip. Let me say something that happened to me, and it shocked me. David, I was in Louisiana. Heath, would you preach at a preacher and elder's breakfast Monday morning? What do you want me to say? He said, talk about evangelism. Okay. And I made this statement, and if you go to Senwa, Central Louisiana Church of Christ, and you ask them about me, I would like to know what they said. Because they were so angry at me that two of them got up and walked out. Here's what I said. In the course of talking about the need to reach the lost, I said, if I were an elder, and I mean this with all my heart, if I were an elder in a congregation, and our preacher, quote our, was not trying to get Bible studies and visiting, we'd have a talk. And if that didn't change, he'd be gone. But I said, if I'm an elder and I wasn't doing this, I'd step down. They got so mad, brother, they got up and walked out. Now, why do we have them on the square preaching? So that guy and that guy and those three back there and that guy can go out here and win souls to Christ. That's the only reason the church exists. But I want to become a preacher. I was in Russia, of all places, Murmansk, Russia, in a hotel room with Lee Davis and one other brother that's going to remain nameless because I want to say something about him. And we were talking about why people get started to preach. And I said, for the most part, it's ego. If you think about it in the most serious way and examine what happened, somebody told you, you sound good in the pulpit. If they hadn't told you that, you probably would have quit, right, Bill? But eventually we have to get past that. But some never do. That's why we have this problem of, I'm in the pulpit, the rest of it's your work. To me, that's not a gospel preacher. A gospel preacher should be in the community. We have a graduate named Jeff O'Dare who preaches in Ridgely, Tennessee. We're going to be with him in a meeting, God willing, in August. Jeff O'Dare walks the streets of that small town, and he sees somebody digging a ditch, goes and gets a shovel and helps him. He sees somebody painting his house, goes, hey, ask him if he can help. He has that church about three times the size it was when he first went there. Why? Personal evangelism. And it's hard to get preachers to do that. Brothers and sisters, personal peeve here. This is a scruple with me. But we're developing a pastoral system just like the denomination. I got a call the other day from an elder. He said, "Our preacher's out of town. Could you fill in?" And I thought to myself, aren't you supposed to be able to preach? I went, but something wrong with that picture. A fourth thing I learned from 2 Corinthians 5:14, that the student who succeeds, the preacher who succeeds, finally realizes what the real motive is. Sunakai. I am constrained, impelled, pushed, pressed on by the love of Christ. Have you fallen in love with Jesus? In the first chapter of Revelation, there is a picture of the glorified Christ. It mentions his eyes, and women tell me the first thing they notice about a man is his eyes. Have you ever noticed the eyes of Christ? His hair? His feet? Fellas, take that and ask the brethren, let's fall in love with Jesus. What's he look like? What is he? And when a student or a preacher or anyone falls in love with Christ, that's half the battle. You're going to go on then. You're going to keep on going because of that love. And I've learned that those preachers who succeed are in love with Christ. Those preachers who are in love with the idea of preaching fail. Those people who are in love with the idea of being in front of people, just that or not only, they fail. But when that guy is burning inside of him for Christ, oh, he will succeed. I wish we had a machine at Memphis that looks like that door through which you walk at the airport that's metal, checking for metal. If they would check for, does he love Christ? Wouldn't that be good? Sometimes a student will come because he can't find himself. He is struggling to find God. Sometimes they do. We've had students come who, I don't know if I want to preach or not, but after about a year or two there, in fact somebody said that the other day here, that after a year, was that you? That was you that said that. You didn't know whether you wanted to preach or not until I told you to go try out? What happened? Yeah. I said, you can't graduate with that attitude. A sixth thing I've learned. There are some men who think that preaching is an easy life. And so they come to school for the wrong reason. They hear the joke that preachers only work 4 hours a week. In the city of Memphis, there are 17 hospitals. When we were about to leave South Haven, they had 612 members. Do you know that some of those people would go ahead and get sick and go to the hospital and just interrupt my day? And if you have 6 or 7 or 8 visits, do you know how long that takes? And you have to drive from hospital to hospital? And I know for sure that I spent about 25 to 30 hours a week in the hospitals. And I knew something else, that when someone in the congregation was having a serious operation or any operation, I was going to get there an hour before operating time. I'm not bragging on me, I'm just telling you about the life of a preacher. We had an elder in one congregation who liked to call me at 5 in the morning to see if I was up. One time I'd been in the hospital all night, and so I was asleep when I collapsed. Dorothy, look at that one, God bless her. That elder called, she said, he's been up all night, leave him alone. Preachers don't have a job, and preacher, if you think of it as a job, please quit now. We had a 24/7 career of helping people. And sometimes when a student hears that, he wants to quit. That's too much. Let's look at Matthew 23 a moment. Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples. The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. When a preacher preaches to me, I try to get the good. I try to get the thought. I don't pay attention to his character. I try to be like Paul, who said, whether they preach from contention or because they love me, at least Christ is preached. But there is a problem if we don't fix it. Watch this. He said, what they tell you, but don't do what they do. What do they do, Lord? They bind heavy burdens on everyone else, but they wouldn't lift their fingers to do one of them. I'm in the pulpit, and I'm preaching to people about doing personal work, and I'm not doing anything, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm in the pulpit and I'm telling the brethren, let's go visit the sick, and I'm not doing it, I'm not going to listen to you. And we're not going to teach that at Memphis either. Why do they do this? They love the uppermost rooms. They love the greetings in the market. They like to be called Rabbi, Rabbi. You ever heard anybody say, I'm the preacher of the so-and-so Church of Christ? Ever heard that phrase? What, all the other members are dead? There's a sign in front of the building in Troy, Tennessee, that says ministers, 300 members. And when a man gets the idea that he's the minister, he's got a problem. And so I've learned to try to teach these fellows integrity. And Mike, thank you for that lesson a while ago. Wow. Seven fiddles. You think your fellows would have a church if nobody came? I mean, if you're that important, you ought to be the only one there. I'm almost done. I learned something else about preachers and trying to train them. They won't do crossword puzzles. Because they are intellectually lazy. When H.E.O. Bowles preached, fellows, the right hand would be reaching like this. Somebody asked him, when they built a Bowles, what are you doing? He said, I'm reaching for the exact word that makes this point. What is my tool as a preacher? Words. How do I handle those words? How many of you know the difference between apt, likely, and liable? Looking at what is that? Huh? I didn't know there was any difference. If you say of a person he's liable to do that, you must be going to take him to court. That's a legal term. Wrong word. He's likely to do that. Well, he's apt to do it. No, you mean he's skilled in it? Well, when I throw out words and I don't know what they mean, I'm lacking something. I'm being intellectually lazy. At Memphis, we teach two foreign languages, Greek and English. Did you know that in Mississippi, you don't breathe air? It's where you go. Up air, down air, over air. Try to get that out of a student when he comes to school. They won't understand when you go back. I know the rationalization there. One last point. Well, it's the next to the last point. I've learned I have to be very careful about my attitude toward all preachers. These guys will tell you that every time they spoke in chapel, they were critiqued. When Bill Klein ran the Bellevue Preacher Training School years ago, he had a garbage can in the chapel hall where the guys spoke. And every time they made a grammatical error, he would throw a washer into that garbage can. Now, can you imagine how terrorized you would be? Ka-ching! Brother Hearn threw a pencil at me one day. Yeah. If David Jones had been there, he just heard ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. But I have to be careful that I don't listen to all preaching that way. Because it's my job when I'm listening to apply it to me. So I don't measure preachers that way. Years ago, Fort E. Wallace Jr. came to Memphis and he got sick. We had to take him to the hospital. He started bleeding. Keith, you're going to fill in for him. Now, can you imagine this greenhorn? Frank Young was still living then, and Frank Young was a son-in-law to Gus Nichols. Frank married Gracie Nichols. And he said, you can do it. You get up there and do it. When I got up there, Brother Young was sitting right on the edge of his pew like this. And I thought, everything I say, he's already taught me. What am I going to? He was pulling for me. So I learned from those folks and from watching these students not to listen to them that way. I'll never forget the day when my son was preaching. He went through the school, my youngest son. And all of a sudden I realized, I'm not thinking about Mark. I'm listening to his sermon. I can't accomplish something out there, and so did he. I'm trying to say to you fellows, it's a privilege to teach you. And it's a rare privilege. And so I've learned the church ought to do it. There is a problem with the marriages, and we have to watch that and encourage it. I've learned it's hard to get preachers to do personal work. I don't know why that is. Ought to be number one. I've learned that the one thing that will keep them going is the love of Christ. I've learned that they need integrity and a host of intellectual fervor. And I've also learned that they will invite you for a meeting once they graduate. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Let me thank Joe and Betty O'Bannon for their hospitality this week. Joe and I are going to get up at 3 a.m. and go to the airport. Can you imagine? Now that's an elder. He wants to get me out of town. I don't know what to do. I'm grateful to the three elders here and to Wayne and the two preachers, other preachers. Wayne, thanks. I'm glad to have been here. Thank you very much.